Okay, we tried this once. Here we go again. Welcome everybody to the 15 Years Later podcast. I, as always, am Mike Wilden here with Tim Larson. And Tim, we had a hell of a time with this one.
Yep, this is episode 8 of the podcast, following up episode 8 from the blog, and it has not been easy to bring this to you guys. This is our second attempt at recording this. The first one did not go well. And I feel like if we're being honest here about life, we should explain just how badly this has gone.
We might as like,
where should we start?
You came over to the apartment, a few days ago, last weekend. We were like, oh, we've got plenty of time. We're going to get ahead of the game here. And started off nice, you know, went into, you know, got some wings, kind of walked around town a little bit, yep. Randomly ran into my nephew. So that was kind of fun.
That's true. We stupidly walked around the downtown area close to your apartment, confident that we were going to come back to your apartment and hit record and do a podcast.
I mean, there was a point in the restaurant while we were sitting there and you were like, oh man, all we need is a generator and we could record this in a meadow.
We could
or
record
a parking
in a meadow.
Lot. Like if we were like tailgating for a game, like, yeah. And we were just so high on our ability and like we were so excited for our technological genius that we thought we had.
We picked up a new piece of technology that was going to allow us to just, it was going to be light and you know, we could set it up anywhere. And man, we were confident just going in. Let's just record the podcast. And
yeah. Well, and you know what? These are a lot of fun to record in person. That's the thing, is we do most of these over Zoom, and we had to re-record this one over Zoom currently. That's what we're doing.
Yep.
Side note, forgot my microphone.
Yep.
In Wisconsin. So I probably sound a little distant or something like that because, you know, that's just how this whole thing goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were excited to record this one in person. You came to my cozy little apartment. We set up all these wires in here. It's really funny thinking about how covered with wires this floor was.
Yeah, we had shit everywhere that day. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was great though. You brought your like rocking long chair thing. We were all set, we thought. And then we gave a test recording a shot. And you were like, hold on, that doesn't sound right. And we started playing it back and forth. And the quality of your mic wasn't working, you know, it wasn't great. So we were trying a lot of different things. And I finally said, hey, let's switch the cords. And then I started sounding like shit. And how long do you think we tried to fix this issue? And how long did we tinker with this?
That had to be an hour and 45 minutes.
At least, yeah, it was pretty close.
Yep. So we did. We switched microphones. We switched wires. We switched settings on the it's audio interface is the thing that we bought to be able to do this.
You pushed buttons all over God. Like any button on that little like interface thing you had, you pushed it, unpushed it, pushed this one without that one.
I was prepared to burn your apartment down to get a clean sound out of it. And that didn't work. So
I'm glad you didn't. Finally, what we ended up doing, it was we just set up a mic in between us. You came and brought your little lawn rocking chair and set it up next to the door by my kitchen. And I just sat on the edge of my couch over here, the mic between us. We were facing the same direction.
Yes.
Like we were just staring off into a yard, except it was just a wall in my apartment. And we just had that conversation there. Which
8 inches
nice.
Close, and it was 8 inches closer, and it would have been really awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah. It was a good, I mean, we had the mic, we had like the arm of the couch and everything. If it was closer, it would have been weird. What we had was good. It worked. Yeah. And it was kind of a nice little, it was a good vibe. It was different. By the way, we started recording at about 11:45 p.m.
Yeah, I think, it was closing in on midnight when we started. Yes.
So we decided to take a break in the middle of it. and we opened a bottle of wine because I during the lockdown era of the pandemic collected a whole bunch of alcohol that I'm just never gonna drink because I don't drink a lot on my own. I was like, oh, this would be a good opportunity to go through some of that.
Before you get into this, I'd like to point out that the end of the story you're about to start is a wonderful ending where the glass of wine tasted delicious.
Yes, there has to be some kind of silver lining here, right?
Yes. However, well, go ahead.
We chose a bottle. Well, you chose a bottle of wine because I was like, just take your pick. And we realized pretty quickly that I do not have a wine opener,
You
which,
have, no,
to
you
be
do not.
fair, again, I don't drink really on my own, so I didn't really have a reason. The only time I had had wine in this apartment before, it was like the screw off cap or whatever, and that was something, somebody brought some, I don't know, Moscato or whatever the hell.
Now, the motivation for opening this bottle of wine, by the way, was that I had run out of beer and it was probably 12:30, 12:45 at night. There really wasn't anywhere to go to get more beer. So we decided to get into the wine stash.
Yes, and we still had more recording to do, so you needed
Yeah,
something.
I did. Needed some fuel for the fire.
So I brought up to you after we found out that, oh, I don't have a wine opener, that I still have the cork where when I was up in Green Bay a few years ago, I had some coworkers over for a party and we didn't have a wine opener, and somebody basically screwed, like it took a screw and just got it really, really into the cork and then used a fork to just pull it out. And it was really funny. We were all laughing, just at how goofy and MacGyver-ish it was. I still have that cork with the screw in it. And so I showed that to you and I was like, hey, we could just give this a shot. So I got into my, we'll call it a toolbox.
It's not a toolbox, but go ahead.
It's not, it's a box of tools, but it's not a toolbox.
Okay, if we're gonna, so we're gonna tell everybody what the actual box is.
Okay. So I initially did this when I was poor and at first moved in. And I just haven't transitioned yet because I haven't had a reason to. But it's basically just a Guitar Hero box that I just put some tools in. Haven't even thought about it because I haven't needed a lot of tools, when you live in an apartment.
But we had a need. We had a need, so
You
we went to
did.
the Guitar Hero toolbox.
Yes, and I did have a lot of tools in there.
Yes, you did. I agree.
I found some basically like a hook with a screw. So like you'd be like, you put in a wall to like hang something on it, kind of thing. And it had a screw on the end of it. And I was like, oh, this will work perfectly. We can get the screw in the cork and you have a thing to pull it out. So I gave that to you. And why don't you tell everybody how that worked?
I should have known going in that this wasn't going to work because the cork itself, it right in the middle had a little bit of a crease in it. It doesn't go through the whole cork, but at the top, it's got this little crease. Well, I started putting that screw into that crease. I can't believe I just said that out loud. So many people are going to laugh about the sexual innuendo that I just did. But so I started screwing this hook into the cork, but it had some give to it basically, right? So it didn't really have a lot of material to grab onto. So I thought, you know what? I'll get this thing screwed all the way in, and the hook was sticking out. It was great. Got my finger in there, pulled on the cork, and I basically excavated the middle of the cork for about 3/4 of an inch to an inch down. So started creating a hole in the middle of the cork. But there was no way that it was going to get the cork out.
Yeah. You tried it at an
I
angle. That
did.
didn't work.
Yeah.
And then I found a drill bit.
Yeah, the drill bit I thought was going to be key.
So I had this drill bit. No drill, mind you. You asked of the drill, and I felt like I had one somewhere. I just couldn't remember, but like it wasn't in the toolbox. I'm like, I don't know why I have these bits. I felt like I had a, I couldn't remember. Like, oh well. So we had a drill bit, no drill. So you started kind of digging at the cork with that. And as you were doing that,
I made the excavation of the hole deeper. I did a good job with the drill bit of getting that drill screwed into the cork. I felt like I was doing a pretty good job. But We noticed a
Right.
problem. And what was the problem?
Well, you noticed it more. I will say, from my perspective, the thing I remember was you, as you were doing this with the drill bit, you were telling me a story about once when you had tried to dig out
Yes.
a cork with a knife, and what you ended up doing was pushing the cork into the bottle, and you thought, oh,
Yes.
this will work just fine. But instead, what happened is it created so much pressure that it just ended up spraying all over the place. And you told me the story as you were doing the exact same thing
Yes.
with the drill bit.
Well,
And I was kind of like, all right,
I was
well.
hopeful for a different result.
Right. We got a kind of a different result.
Yes, we did. Because the
Yeah.
first time I did that, when the cork went all the way into the neck, and then the two different pressures of air met each other, so much wine came out of that bottle that it went all over the ceiling of the condo that we had rented.
Yes.
That was bad. That did not happen at your place. Something else happened.
Well, you had kind of chipped away at it and broken the cork enough.
Yeah.
So basically, we got like, you thought we, hey, I think we've got, we might be able to pour this out here. So you went and to pour one in the glass, and it was just like a, like that's the only way I can describe it. It's just the, just one little, like a few drops of just one little, just thing
That
just
little
came out
drop.
and the, into the grass, the, into the glass.
That so what happened is the cork, which was now floating on top of the wine, when I went to pour it, the cork got back in the way of the bottle and wouldn't let much wine through. And that summed up the whole goddamn evening, really. No matter what we tried to do,
Well, that was you like it was all you had broken, like you'd poked a hole in the cork or something like that. You hadn't actually got like pushed it all the way into the bottle, but
okay.
we thought, oh, hey, maybe this is it. And so you went for a pour and just nothing. And it,
That
we
was
were just
sad.
we were laughing our asses off,
Yes.
partially because it was just naturally funny, but also partially because that was how the night went. We
Yes.
just couldn't get anything to work. And so it was just that was kind of our breaking point, but we had a lot of there's a lot of laughter late at night with that one.
Yeah.
You eventually did end up pushing the cork in, and you were like, all right, here we go. And I was ready to watch it just spray all over, my white ceiling in my kitchen. But
We were close
instead,
to that,
just like there was just like a little mini fountain that just came out for like 1 second and basically hit your black shirt, and you kind of went, well, there, and you were looking around like, I think I might have gotten some wine somewhere. I went, no, you pretty much blocked it.
yeah. I didn't notice that it hit me. I saw a little bit go over my shoulder, and I was like, "Hey, well, it's not on the ceiling. I'm sorry, that's on your counter somewhere. Do we need to clean that up?" You're like, "No, that pretty much just hit you right in the chest. It's all over your shirt right now." And I was like,
Yeah, you got it.
cool, cheers. Let's pour a goddamn glass of wine and let's move on. This has been a long, long day. So, where we're going with this, ladies and gentlemen, is we recorded this podcast 6 days ago and can't use any of it.
Yeah. And then of course the next day I had an epiphany. I looked over at the little drawers on the side of my living room here and realized that that is where I keep the drill.
Oh,
And I
for
sent
God's
you a
sake,
picture of
you have a
that.
drill in your apartment.
Yeah.
I used a drill bit and tried to hand screw through the cork to open that bottle of wine while you had a drill in the living room the entire time.
Yes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the touching story of how we attempted to do this podcast the first time. So welcome to podcast episode number 8, try number 2. We are Mike Wilden and Tim Larson. You ready to get into this blog episode?
Let's go.
Let's put part one behind us and move forward. Let's talk about the blog.
Okay, we tried this once.
Yeah.
That's.
So, yeah, we did. We sure did. We tried the podcast once. I tried writing the blog once. This has been a whole damn catastrophe. Agreed.
Yes.
Moving onward and upward. We never stop.
Yes. And we will we'll move on to the next thing with that very line. Because that is how you start. Why am I doing this? Part two.
Yeah, it's almost like I predicted how badly this podcast would go.
Yeah, but as poorly as the podcast has gone so far, at least with the technology and everything, this, I think, might be the best thing that either of us has written so far.
Thank you. I mean, said that last time, and that's a heavy mantle to walk around with, but I will say that I do really enjoy this one.
I hope you're proud of it, because it's very good. This is one of those where when you sent it to me the first time, I was like, it's good, but it's missing something. And right. So when we were kind of doing our, you know, Stephen King editing each other thing, I was like, add something into this. Like, I don't know anything about these teachers or, yep, you know, that I know you can do better. Cause I'd seen you write, and this ended up being, I mean, there are a couple coming up, down the road that are just as good, if not better, but up to this point, I think I remember when you sent me the rewritten version of this, and, I was blown away. This is fantastic.
Well, thank you. We've done a nice job of pushing each other with our writing, for this, because both of our names are on this, and we want it to be something that we're proud of. And we agreed very early on in the editing process that when we have suggestions to make to each other, egos are not going to be part of the conversation. Like, this is about the project, right? And we agreed to that, and we've been pretty good about that, I think. Full disclosure, when I wrote the first part of this, why am I doing this? I actually intended to get to this. But as I outlined this, I started it at 11 o'clock at night, and it went until 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was writing, and I was like, I'm not even going to get close to what I meant to write tonight. But what we figured out was, in the first episode, I was writing more about getting ready to make the decision to go forward with the rest of my life. And so I sort of needed to detail that. And as this is a blog, we don't want to write something that's going to take anybody 2 hours to read, you know? So it turned into something that needed to be two different parts. It did that organically while I was writing it.
Well, and I like it too, for that reason. It's like, you know, everything that led up to you getting into the situation where you were going to discover teaching is its own story in itself. Like, everything that comes before that is relevant, but none of that really shows like, oh, this is why you're a teacher, that's why you're a teacher. But it all brought you to the place, community college, and, you know, the things we're about to discuss that did inspire you to become a teacher. So it's absolutely relevant.
And then the funny thing is, I wrote the first version of this second part and I sent it to you, and talking about pushing each other, the only thing I put in about these two teachers that I write about in here was a simple line that said something like, a couple of teachers I ran into were just bringing it and inspired me. And then I moved on to talking about why I decided to become a teacher with the third character in this, which is a pretty important character. And you were like, whoa, I just read this thing about these two teachers. You're going to have to explain more than that. And I really think that having Frank in this story is crucial. But I think you pushed me to the point where I wrote about those two teachers, and it really completes a whole circle and a whole thought process here. And so the story landed on its feet really well as a result of a collaboration between two of us, really. And hey, well, isn't that great?
That's been the fun of this this whole thing, really. I just, you know, the whole creativity part of it, and just the, you know, the teamwork and everything. Anyway, before we really get into this this blog, there was one other thing I wanted to say. I've heard you say before that this is a fun exercise in kind of reflecting on your path.
Yes.
And appreciating how you got to where you're at, and appreciating that journey along the way. I relate that a lot to episode 3 on a plane to Hawaii, where I'm at. I really enjoyed that because, I went from working in a meat market and a comedy club to Hawaii and all over the country, and doing all this stuff. And I've especially the last few years really enjoyed when something really cool happens. I like kind of tracing it back. It's just interesting. It's really cool to be able to connect those dots, and you really appreciate those people that inspired you in those situations, So I'm glad that you got to kind of have that exercise for yourself too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cathartic journey that we're on, and we intended to just write funny stories about two jackasses in a bar, having wings and beer, and we're finding ourselves reflecting on life entirely. So this story got bigger than we intended it to, in its process, which is a fun thing, and that's going to continue to be a theme as we go further. So, I hadn't thought about these people and that decision to become a teacher in a long time. I'm focused right now a little bit more on, hey, I only got a few years left to go here. So it's funny at this stage in my life to look back at it and think about, hey, how did I get here in the first place? That thought process had been left behind a while ago. So this is great. This is really great to be talking about this at this point.
It's awesome. All right, let's actually hop into the blog here. So as I alluded to earlier, first line, okay, we tried this once. Great way to bring this in. I know we kind of played with the beginning and the end of it when we were kind of doing our final edits, but I love the way you bring it in where you're like, we last time we looked at me trying to be all of these other things. Now let's actually get to the damn point. Blame it on the 1103 beer. Here's the story. That was a lot of fun. So that being said, like when you sat down to write part two, knowing that part one didn't get to where you were looking to originally, again, worked out fine. I love the way we're telling the story now. But when you first sat down to write part two, like what was your goal, and like how was your thought process different than when you wrote part one?
Finish the job was thought process number one. You dumbass, you titled it this, why did I become a teacher, basically, and then you didn't tell the story, so let's actually tell the story. So that, I think that was job one. We can agree with that. But at that point, I had set the stage. I had talked about all of the other things leading up to that, and so it was, how can I put this? It was kind of it was lighthearted for me because all of the groundwork was already done. And so when I went to write the second part, I didn't have to fill in any background stuff. I felt like I can just go from here and just tell this part of the story. And it got me to the moment when, and I know we're going to get to this later, but it got me to the moment where I said, hey, I got an idea. I think I would like to be a teacher. And so I got to put myself in that mindset and go back in time to a fun time in my life and take it seriously, and start to write about stuff. And as we mentioned in my first edit of this, I glossed over something very important. The nature of those two teachers. I just mentioned being inspired, but it really did. As I started writing it, it occurred to me, this wasn't really about me. This was about people around me that created a decision-making thing for me. There was some inspiration there, but there was also just situationally things were there that pointed me in the right direction. And I'm not a big believer in, like destiny type stuff. But I will say that the root of the cause of why I am who I am today had to do with a whole bunch of things coming together in a very short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I the the phrase is a little overused. Oh, things happen for a reason, and I don't think people necessarily think about what that actually means. I kind of like to put my own little spin on it, which is things tend to work out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
They work out the way they need to. And it's a little bit, you know, not as destiny, you know, related, but it's things tend to kind of work out. I don't want to boost your ego too much here, because I'm going to mention a couple of movies, as we are in a movie group after all.
Yep.
I think part of the reason that The Dark Knight is such a fantastic movie is because Batman Begins is the entire, it's not even, you know, for a long time, superhero movies were like, we have to throw in the origin and we have to get the whole thing started, and they're telling a whole thing. Batman Begins was just, here is the origin story.
That's true.
And it was a whole movie and it was good. But then when The Dark Knight came around, it was like, we don't have to get into all that stuff again.
Yeah.
We can just tell the story of Batman and the Joker and Harvey Dent. And I mean, Dark Knight is such a phenomenal movie.
Agreed.
So that's, I didn't think about this until you just said it now, but that's probably why this, part of the reason why this one was so good. Cause you know, now the stage is set where everybody's like, okay, we got the actual origin. Let's get to it.
Yeah.
It probably would have worked okay if you had just, if this was a standalone thing, but it works better with that background where it's like, hey, you know, we led up to this. Or here was everything leading up to this.
Oh, you know, I have a
So,
phrase for you for that. It sounds like you're about to ask a next question. So let me just throw this in there before you move on to that. At the same time, when I was in that community college, I was taking creative writing courses. And one of the guys that was there, he talked about in the middle of writing something, not intending to, but coming across a direction to go with your story. Like you're just in the middle of telling your story and something occurs to you while you're writing it and you just run with it. He would refer to that as a happy accident. And I'm
Yes.
going to say that we don't deserve credit for having a part one that lays a foundation to go into a part two, like they actually did with the Batman series, Christopher Nolan did. I'm going to call that a happy accident. And I think we're both pretty pleased with how this particular episode worked itself out as a result of that.
Yes. Way to be humble, Tim. That's very nice.
I'm trying something new.
All right. So when you first start out this story, the first part of it is you in college as a college student.
Yeah.
And when
Oh,
you
the first
first
time.
arrive, you,
yeah.
Yes. When you first arrive, you there's a lot of great scenery here. And I love the emotions that you describe with both of your parents. Because they're
Yep.
so like they're so relatable. Anybody that has a mom and a dad can relate to this when it comes to one of those times where it's like, all right, time to let you go off, you know, to college, or if you want to, you know, go to a lot younger, okay, we're letting the kid on the bus for the first day of school or whatever, you know, for kindergarten. And so first you talk about how like, you know, mom's just going through all sorts of emotions that you'll never even begin to understand.
Right.
And that's just, I mean, that's the mom's right. That's just, there's a whole lot going. She wants you to be safe, but she also wants you to go off on your own. She wants you to do the right thing, but she knows that you have to learn the lessons on your own, but she wants you to be safe. And just that circle, just bouncing back and forth in her head. So it's a lot of emotions for her.
Yeah. My interpretation of all of that at the time as a 17-year-old young man was, my mom's nuts. It's like, she's lost it. Because I didn't have the perspective as a 17-year-old boy to think, you know, I'm the baby of the family and I'm the first one that's like going away to college. And we don't have a lot of experience with this. You know, we're a very blue collar family and we're in the Detroit area. So an awful lot of my family didn't go through a lot of higher education. They just went into the auto industry. There were jobs there. So
Yeah.
you didn't really need to go through higher education. You just get yourself into the industry. It's there. There's a pipeline that's already established. There's a suburb around Detroit for a reason, you know. That's historically
Right.
a thing. So when I went to go away to college, it was very new for our whole family unit. And I had my own insecurities about meeting new people and leaving the house and all that kind of stuff. But I specifically remember us getting into a tiff because I was leaving in like 3 days or something like that. And she asked me if I had gotten a checking account, specifically to, I don't know, to pay whatever bills while I was there. And I was like, no. And she lost it. And she was mad at me and yelling at me. And I was like, okay, I need you to take two steps back. I don't understand why you're yelling at me about a checking account. And I
Of
was
course, in
like,
hindsight.
yeah, I mean, she's just trying to make sure that I'm prepared. You know,
Yeah.
that's just, and she's disappointed that I'm not doing a better job of caring about being prepared. And on my end, I was like, who are you and what are you doing? You know, stop yelling at me about a checking account. I don't even understand what's going on here. It was looking back on it very fondly. There were just funny moments like that, where
Yeah.
my mom is just, I think, wrestling with my baby's leaving the house and he's an idiot. And I'm very uncomfortable with just how dumb my son is trying to leave here and he needs to get his shit together. And I of course had a different interpretation of that. But that's where we were.
My parents, yeah. I remember my parents having similar things. I don't know if it was necessarily a checking account. I'm sure it was something, money related. But I remember them asking, "Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do that?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, just whatever. Just leave me alone." And just I think back to that now. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I get it."
You're running with your phrase. It all works out in the end. It all works out.
Yeah, there you go. But the other even funnier to me into this was how dad like your dad is in this part of the story. Just the whole complaint, the like saying things, just complaining about like saying weird stuff about like what side of the building your room is on and something with the windows, and you're like, what? Why does this matter? That all cracked me up a lot because my dad was a farmer for 40, 50 something years. He grew up, and then ran the farm, the family farm. And so, there were times where he would say, like, "Hey, can you go on the east side of the garage?" And then I have to stop and be like, "Oh, fuck. Okay, let's see. Which way's north?" All right, so north is this way because this is the way that the roads are, and that's so then okay, that's it. Like just but yeah, it's just such a dad thing that, and he's thinking about, he's got all this experience and now he knows these things, and so he of course is thinking about all the logistical parts of like, well, you're gonna want this building to be or over here facing this way. And you as a kid, you're like, what the f I don't care. Like, why does it matter? And then I love right toward like in the next paragraph, you start, now you're on your own and you're looking around, you're maybe getting a little anxious, and you're like, oh, I've got this, you're really well describing the cinder block room and the poster and this window that's clearly on the wrong side of the building.
Nobody would want to be in that dorm room. It's clearly the
Yeah.
window's the wrong side of the building.
I appreciated that. This is you and I have we have different writing styles, which I think complement each other pretty well.
Yeah, I'd agree
This
with that.
I found this to be kind of a fun commonality when I was rereading this recently. This felt similar to when I was writing about Home Run Part One, when I would take shots at myself, like when I left the one town to go to the town just to the north, And then later on, like when I was like, I became a Cubs fan, it's like, oh, well, the
The
team's,
North
yeah,
Sider
like
thing, yeah.
I very blatantly like made fun of myself. And this is kind of one of those things where you called yourself on, you're just like, oh, dad, what do you know? And then you immediately are like, oh, this window's on the wrong side of the building.
You know, that's a good point. The device name is a throwback, right? Movies do throwbacks and stories do throwbacks, but our version of it is, I am an idiot, and here's a throwback to remind you why.
And it just, but it's
Good for us.
I always, yeah.
I enjoyed that part of my life. I enjoyed the fact that I was dropped into that environment, and I enjoyed meeting people. And it's almost like you find out a little bit about who you are when you go through something like that. You're so uncomfortable. And
Very much so.
you know, that was a good you know, obviously that trip to college didn't work out the way we all planned, but I've got some takeaways from that. You know, there was some good stuff there.
Yeah. Well, me too. I mean, some of the people I met there were lifelong friends, Mike Hilty being one of them. What real quick, what was your GPA at the end of that semester?
That was a 0.82.
Hmm.
0.82.
So I imagine that's several D's and or F's. How did they get the 2 and the 0.82? I mean, is that like, is there like an extra special, like did you do like a D 0.3 kind of thing or?
Well, I think it actually goes like three or four decimal places usually, but people usually just refer to things like, you know, I got a 3.6 this semester. They usually just go, you know, the one decimal place. But when there's a zero at the beginning of it, you kind of want to keep another number just to feel like you have two digits that are important in your grade point average. So I don't remember like the full thing, but I just it was impressed upon me that I had a 0.82 when I opened the letter over winter break, and my report card was accompanied with a letter that was an academic probation letter, and things got real serious real quick.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. The other thing I wanted to ask was, you have a line in here saying, "I saw where my life was heading otherwise." When
Yes.
you first start, when you decided to go to community college, where was that, if you don't mind my asking?
I had worked at Meijer the entire time because when I bought my first car when I was 15, I had money from, well, we're going to hear about this in the next episode. So I'll leave where I got the money from to buy my first car for the next episode. But I had a car, and my dad was making it very clear to me that I had to pay for gas and insurance, and money had to come from somewhere. And so, without saying get a job, he was kind of saying, so what's your plan for paying for all this? Which was saying get a job, but also I'm not buying your gas for you. So, my sister had seen that they were hiring up the street at Meijer, so I just went and got a job, and I was there for like 11 years. It was just always an easy place for me to keep a job and go and get my gas paid for and whatever. So I dropped out of college and I picked up full-time hours at Meijer. And I was looking at the other people that were working full-time there, and almost all of them, it was like that was their life. Like they were renting an apartment and they were working full-time. And you know, I was just like, that's not going to work for me. Like, that's not enough. And, you know, there were options. Like, if you're there long enough, like, you could get a management position and make more money, and then you'd maybe have a nicer apartment, I guess. But I was like, that's not it. And there were options for the automotive industry too that my whole family had gone towards, or a lot of them. And I wasn't interested in that at all. So I looked at the path in front of me and went, I got to figure this college thing out. This isn't right. So the first time I went to college, I was sort of following a predestined path of you finish high school, you go to college, you figure it out. The second time, I realized that my life was not going to be worth what I wanted it to be, and decided to go to college for the purpose of getting somewhere. And that was a game changer.
Yeah, when you actually care about it, it's a lot easier to do well.
Yes.
Because you had that motivation. I know that one too. Not quite to that extreme, but I know that one too. So yeah, get back to community college. I love the line here, Dean's List.
Yeah. I was close to the 4.0 at that point. And I think there was two reasons. Like one, yes, I went there and I was like, I'm gonna get this right this time. So it will get me the kind of direction I need to go and be a professional somewhere. Like I was thinking college needs to be job training to get me out of what is looking like the direction my life is gonna go. But also I kind of needed to prove to people who were disappointed with my first attempt that I could be good at it. You know, like I didn't need to go to community college and then get a C minus as an average because that wasn't going to do. You know what I mean? So like I needed to make up for how badly I had done before. I think there was something in my brain that worked that way. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to show you guys something. And so yeah, I was killing the grades.
Before we move on to the most important part of this story,
Yeah.
the three most important parts of the
Yeah.
story, really all in one. I just want to give a quick shout out. I won't name him by name, but I've got a buddy of mine that's going back to school right now at a community college.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, he's got a family at home and everything too, a couple of kids, and but he's making the effort
Oh.
to go back to school. You know, finished his first semester a couple months ago. He was on the dean's list, and I'm not surprised because I know he's very, you know, I know he's a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
But I am super proud of him though. And
Oh, that's
he
awesome.
knows who he is. If he hears this, he knows who he is, and I'm proud of you, man.
Yeah.
Just want to give that little shout out.
Get your go kick some ass. Go kick some ass.
Yeah, keep kicking ass for
Yeah.
sure, because
Yeah.
he's good dude. So you are a community college student. You run into a couple of teachers that inspired you.
Yeah.
That ended up being role models to you,
Yeah.
similar in a way that you were to me. Tell me a little bit about Miss Udo. Now I know like you've kind of played with the names a little bit here, but tell me about start
Right.
with Miss Udall. I love her philosophy just as far as like being more focused on how you're learning the material than and just you know caring about you as an individual, because there are a lot of aspects of both of these characters that I saw in you as a teacher a long time ago. And I think it's one of the reasons so many people look at you as their favorite teacher. Not to boost your ego too much there or anything, but
It's okay. You could do that. I'm fine with
fair enough.
it. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, let me run with that. Let's remember from the last time I tried to write, Why Am I Doing This? That I had Father Willem pulling my hair if I didn't do my homework and scaring the shit out of me. You know,
Yeah.
very authoritarian, demonstrative characters in charge of my education. And you know, some of them were nice too, but in that private school, that religious school, there were some intimidating people, and she's the exact opposite of all of that. She was in that classroom, and just you could feel the enthusiasm emitting from her for you doing well. She wanted to change her delivery and lesson plan so that it helps you. She wanted to guide you towards success. And if you didn't have it right, she wanted to stop and take a different approach at explaining it so that you did have it right. I mean, I hadn't experienced anything like that, to that point. And it was, I can't explain to you how welcome it was. And then, you know, the real magic of that is on an emotional level, you wanted to do well so you didn't disappoint her. Like you just
Yeah.
wanted to be your best so that this person who is investing in you emotionally, you wanted to make her proud. And My God, she would just smile when you did things right. She would smile as she was explaining things. I know that I use the word graceful, and I can't come up with a better word than this lady who was just gracefully in front of that class, explaining math and guiding you through the learning of math. She was extraordinary. There's no other way around it.
We'll come back to her in a little bit because
Okay.
she kind of, your former ending at the end of all this, all three characters that we meet here, as you put it all together, you go, I have an idea.
That was the end. The
And that
first time I
was,
wrote it was, I have an
yeah.
idea. That's right.
And that was a really good ending, but you were insistent on, I remember I was suggesting reordering some things at first, but then I kind of started to see what you were doing, once we kept going through it. 'Cause you come back to Mrs. Udall.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to that in a second because
Okay.
that really wraps everything. I remember having a professor.
Oh, okay.
There were a couple of classes, wasn't the most motivated student myself. So there are a few times where I like withdrew from classes, for, before it would be a fail or whatever, at a certain point. And there were a handful of times that I did this, and a couple of professors that were like, you need to leave this class. They didn't care. They're just like, you gotta.
Time to drop.
I found myself in a similar, not quite the same, but a similar scenario where I had done poorly on a test, and I kind of looked at like, all right, this is how many points are in the semester. I kind of did the math. I'm like, I'm not gonna do this. I kind of made the realization to myself, like, I'm not gonna succeed. If I stay in this, I'm gonna fail this class, and I'm gonna, destroy my GPA, and I gotta withdraw. And so I went to that professor's office, because he was a pretty nice guy, and I had a little more respect for him. And I just went up. It's like, hey, I just want to let you know I'm withdrawing from the class. I'm sorry, and he just said, hold on, but don't, before you do that, hold on. And he kind of discussed, he kind of talked me through it, and he basically convinced me. He was adamant about it. He was like very concerned. He's like, no, don't drop the class. Listen. And he like did everything he could to convince me, stay in it. We'll work through it. We'll figure out a way. Like, all I'm asking is like, give the effort. We'll figure out a way through like this, whatever test it was or something like that. And then just stay with me though. And we can, he convinced me to stay, and it looked like a very difficult path ahead, but because he was like, all right, I'm going to guide you through this first part and get you caught up kind of thing. And even though you're starting from behind, you can do it kind of thing. And I did. I ended up, I mean, it wasn't like I didn't get an A in the class or anything. I don't think it was possible for me to get an A in the class, but I passed. And just, I was just blown away with how much he cared about my success. It wasn't like, yeah, you're right. You're pretty much, it's, your chances are pretty low that you're gonna pass this class. It was like, no, like, it seems bad, but
We're
I'm going
doing
to give
this.
you,
We're gonna get
yeah.
there. Yeah.
We're doing this. I'm going to do whatever I can to put you in a position. It's going to be tough, but I'm going to put you in the best position I can
Yeah.
to make it through this. And I remember talking to the head of the department, just like, hey, I just want to give a recommendation. Like, I told him this guy's name, and in the middle of it, that guy just went, yeah, we know. Like, just because that's the reputation that
We hear
this
this all the
professor
time.
had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, he's fantastic. We know he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I got I got a lot of that out of Mrs. Udall from when you were telling
Yeah.
Miss your point of view from her. It really seemed similar to that. So I related to that a lot, which is why I wanted to bring this up. But yeah, it's there's something very special about those few teachers that just care so much about your success and about how you're learning it,
Right.
rather than just the mathematical, probability of, is this person going to pass this class? And no, we're going to make it, like, we're going to put them in position to succeed, and they're going to
Yeah.
learn something. And that's the part that mattered. And
Yeah.
I, it's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she was great, and it wasn't, it was everybody. Everybody that was in that classroom, it was like they were, we were all her, her little babies. She was going to make sure that everybody got through this. Well, it was up to her, and she was going to do it, and she did it in such a nice way. Again, I feel like part of it, part of my effort in that class was I didn't want to disappoint her. And I think that's the highest compliment I can give. Like, that lady was so great at what she was doing. I was like, I'm going to get an A because I don't want her to be disappointed with me.
Yeah. Then there's another guy here that was also a big inspiration for you.
Yes.
Again, name, who knows what his actual name is, but yeah, tell me about David Andrews.
Okay, so here's the difference between these two. I felt like Miss Udall cared about me as a person and wanted me to do well because of where I was going in the future. She did just such a great job of connecting with everybody individually. But this guy, he wanted the group of students in there to be a unit. He wanted us all to be on the same page, and that's why he, and his magic was he just created these conversations that you couldn't help but want to be part of the conversation. I mean he just like he stirred a pot every class. That's what he did. He stirred a pot. He got his big stick and came out there. You never knew what he was about to say at the beginning of class. And then he'd read this story, or he'd talk about this movie, or he'd introduce a juxtaposition of morality or something. And it like you couldn't help but raise your hand or just throw something out there. And all of a sudden, we're in a little mini cult. So as opposed to Miss Udall looking at everybody individually, he made us a unit. And what a magician that guy was. And like it was very clear he didn't care about the rules of being an English teacher like the other English teachers did. I had another class with this lady. What a stick up her ass. She was just like, this is the outline and this is what we're doing. And if you don't get it right, you might as well just leave right now. This is blah, blah, blah. And this guy didn't care anything about that kind of organization stuff. All he wanted was to get you inspired because that's when you would get the best out of you. And he enjoyed watching us bounce ideas off each other. And he participated in that also. So he's like a ringleader of just getting you to get emotionally invested in the class. And then he would say, go right. And I would have taken that class for 20 years in a row if I could have, because I could just, it, there's something so expressive about that. There's something that's just great to get it out of you. He was drawing stuff out of us that we didn't even realize. And
I want to take that class now.
seriously, man, it's like you can't help but get an A in that class because all you got to do is be yourself and it's celebrated, David Andrews. Like I said, that guy, I don't think I ever saw him with a shirt tucked in. He just kind of walked in the class and put his bag down on the desk and sat down on the desk and looked at us and started a conversation. There were no notes. There was no like, hey, did you guys read passage 74? And what did you think about paragraph two? He was just like, I'm going to take a totally different approach to this. I'm going to come out here and be a personality in front of these people and create an environment. And once I have the environment created, they'll do some great stuff for me. And, the guy was right. That was an amazing scenario to be in. And I looked at him like, I want to do that. That's, I
Yeah.
want to do what this guy's doing. Incredible.
I remember reading this when you first sent me this rewrite, and I had this silly thought because this is you writing about what inspired you to become a teacher, but for some reason the way I phrased it in my head was like, hey, like you see what you're doing here, right, Larson? Like these traits that you're mentioning, these two, like, because this is, because I obviously You did a very good job of pulling some traits from both of them where I'm like, oh yeah, I see like where this all came from. It was really cool for me seeing that whole origin story and you telling that origin story. But for some reason in my head, I felt like you were almost telling that story and like didn't realize. Like obviously you did, but for some reason in my head, it was
Right.
just but yeah, I really do I do like the way that you pulled the traits from both of them in this story and kind of demonstrated them without just straight up saying like, hey, you know how I'm like this or how I'm like that? You just described them both. And for anybody that knows you, they went, okay, there it is.
I guarantee you, my we've brought up Dentino before. Matt Smith's another guy that teaches with me. They're following along with this. I guarantee you, they read the part where it said he was a rogue teacher that doesn't care about the rules, that just wants to get in the classroom and inspire people. And I guarantee you, they're like, I see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah. That
there are
was.
people, let's speak truth here. There are people that I work with that don't appreciate the fact that I'm kind of dismissive about the rules of professionalism and whatever, that are like, you shouldn't be doing that in the classroom. To that criticism, I think I've always just been like, well, I'm not going to tell you what to do in your classroom. So unless you're my boss, don't tell me what to do in my classroom, because my biggest priority is, without question, getting everything I can out of those students. And if I'm unorthodox, I'll take it.
Well, a big part of your origin story here is Ms. Udall and David Andrews inspiring you. But another big part of what made you decide to be a teacher was you inspiring somebody else. And that's the third character in the story. The Learning Resource Center, being a tutor, obviously, I have some experience being a tutor myself. I'll refrain from, getting into too many of my own tutor stories. But Frank obviously was struggling a lot, and I bet you. Frank probably still thinks about you to this day and thinks like, man, I'm lucky that guy was there to help me through this. Tell me a little bit about Frank and his situation and just what about Frank specifically lit that spark for you, where that made you go, hey, wait, I have an idea.
So I think basically I was toying with the idea of, hey, maybe I can take all these math classes and I could get back into engineering, or maybe I could be a teacher. So it's not like that wasn't even a thought in my head. I took that job to just find out if I liked working with people. So I was canvassing for what are my professional job options that I can find out with this education that I'm getting, and this is one of them. I'm in that learning assistance center, and Frank comes in there, and now you have to understand, like, there were tables in this room, and I sat at one, and it was like the math tutor table, so multiple people would come in with math questions, and I'm helping them with different classes, and it's difficult to go from algebra to pre-calculus to calculus two, to something else. Like, your brain gets pulled in different directions. Frank would come in, and as soon as he would walk in, to be perfectly honest, I would take a deep breath and not roll my eyes, but be like, okay, here we go. Frank's here again. He's going to struggle. I got to make sure that I get, be patient, because I knew from experience of meeting him a couple of times, this is going to go rough. And I don't know. I was just like, he's not doing well, but man, this guy's trying so hard. There was just something about that that just made me like, I just want to get do this for this guy. He's trying so hard. It's genuine. There's nothing fake about him. He's there looking for help. He's trying to get resources to get better at what he's doing, and he's just struggling. And I was like, I got to be able to help this guy. And frequently when he was there, other people were there. So I'm sort of splitting time with other people, but I just find myself going back to him more and more often, like, Frank, how you doing with number four, man? And you know, he would make similar mistakes, and I would just talk it through with him. And he did stay late. Everybody else would leave, and he would stay there, and we could go through a couple of them together. And it was kind of like students were supposed to leave, you know, like the place shut down. And as a tutor, you kind of have the option, like, okay, it's time, you could go, but I would just stay after and go, all right, where are we on number 10? You know, and there was just something so pure about the way that this guy was just desperately trying to get this stuff right that made me, I was just on the bus, you know, I'm on the Frank bus. I need to help Frank out. And I don't know if anybody else was on the Frank bus as far as him passing that class. So maybe I just took it upon myself to get Frank over the hump. And he was, how can you put this? He wasn't just appreciative. He was almost emotionally appreciative. You know, he didn't look like the kind of guy who'd give you a hug and cry, but when he did pass that class, he looked like the kind of guy who was jubilant and he wanted to look at you and let you know that you were part of the reason why he was jubilant. You know what I mean? And that was a feeling that is, man, I've had that feeling quite a few times throughout my career, but that was the first time I had it. We did it. We accomplished something really difficult together. And I was like, I can do this. I can do this for the next 30 years. This is it. This is what I'm doing. I want that feeling, and I'm never going to stop until I keep getting that feeling. Frank is the reason I went, you know what? I got an idea.
I mean, that says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can't not give the two teachers credit for the inspiration, but sooner or later you got to take your own step. And looking at Frank and what we did, that was me taking my own step.
Well then. So bringing it back to Mrs. Udall a little bit, because after you get that after the light bulb goes on with Frank, you see Miss Udall and you mentioned to her like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about being a teacher. And being her, she's like, oh, okay, what a great opportunity we have here. So she lets you do something that you let me do once. Which
That's
is
true. That's true.
we'll get to that in a sec, but she let you teach one of her classes. And you know, mine was more of a observation thing. It was still very early in the education thing. I hadn't applied to the teacher's college at my school yet, because you know, I kind of was resisting it, but I was taking every course related to it that I could before I had to actually apply. And part of that was involved observation. And so they let me ob observe one of your classes. And so I showed up to observe. And, you know, I walked in, I was like, oh, hey, it's me. And instead of just saying, oh, this is Mike Weldon, he's going to observe. You can go take a seat in the back. You saw me. You didn't even say hi. You just went, oh, you guys didn't know you were getting a show today. Here. So you took the marker, you put it up on the tray next to me, and then you went and sat in your chair and you just went, go ahead, do the thing where you're me. And then you just kind of crossed your arms and just had a big grin on your face and just went, like, go ahead. I was like, all right, let's see. What's the lesson plan? I kind of looked at your notes. I'm like, I guess here we go. And I spent a good 5 minutes just, you know, acting, you know, doing my Larson greatest hits. From you know, when I had acted like you and everything, I put somebody on the stupid board. I feel like I remember I forced it a little bit, but I made it work. And then I went and sat down and let you do your thing. But Ms. Udall let you actually teach the class.
Yeah.
Is that what that was the goal there? She was like, ooh, oh, because that was different. She's like, I want to see how this goes. I want to see how well. Now, did she like how much free rein did she give you when you taught that class?
Oh, that's a great question. And yes, I completely misyoodled you when you came into my classroom. I was like, oh, you want to be a teacher? No, you're not going to sit in the back. Get your ass up in front and use, let's see what you can do in front of a group of kids, which is exactly what she did to me. So she's like, let's meet and go over notes. She's like, we're going to do this lesson plan. So I tried to write like my own notes for this. And I remember making, I had Roman numerals, I had an outline of things that I would say and whatever. And I went and I showed it to her and I was like, so here's what I thought I would do. And she looked at it like, this is the worst garbage I've ever seen in my life. So she said, well, I see the organization. Would you like to just use my notes? And I was like, yes, I would. I absolutely would just like to use your notes. And we both exchanged a look like, why did you even make me go through that up, like that activity in the first place? So I was like, yeah, give me your notes. And then if you're okay with it, I'll just try and do it like you do it. And she was like, yes, I'm okay with that. And so that day, it's not like she left and went somewhere else and had lunch. She was in the back of the classroom, and I don't, man, I looked back at her like once or twice. I was so focused on just trying to get through her notes and not screw it up. But when I did look at her, I can't describe how big of a grin she had on her face. She was just loving it. And I'm sure I was doing such a piss poor job, that, she had to reteach it. But she was really enjoying watching me give it a try, spread my wings, like see what happens. So here's a funny thing about that experience. I knew somebody in the class. I had a girlfriend at the time, and her best friend's younger brother was in that class. He's a bit younger. His name is Joe. And I didn't know who else to call on. I know you call on people when you're teaching. I know that from all my experience of years of being in a class. So I would get to something and I would go, well, so Joe, what do you think about that? And he'd be like, why? Now, come on, man, just because you know me? And I was like, yes, exactly. That's why. And also because I'm sweating up here. I'm so nervous. And so Joe, just answer the damn question. And so he answered the question. I get to the next one. I was like, so anyway, Joe. He's like, come on. So I basically didn't call on another person because I didn't know any of them. And then I finished the lesson plan, and she invited me to come back the next day to watch her take the next day and see how the students reacted. And that was a real treasure, because the first thing she did was she went to her first example and said, well, no rest for the wicked. Joe, what's your answer to the first one? And he was like, you gotta be kidding me. But I learned something that day, and I think she really enjoyed it. I'm gonna guess she already knew it. Every time I called on him and he was like, could you call on somebody? Could you not? He was saying, or at least physically expressing, dude, anybody else would be fine at this point. All of the other students started to watch this interaction, even the ones who weren't even really there to pay attention. I mean, I'm a new thing, right? I'm a guy doing a lesson plan they haven't seen before. So there's a little bit of an edge that they're like, okay, well, I got to pay attention because it's new. But even if they tried to tune out, they couldn't, because I was picking on Joe. There was a social connection going on there. And so they were interested in the side story. And instinct took over for me. I was like, I'm going to keep going to Joe because I'm noticing the rest of the crowd is watching this happen and they're paying attention. And I have never let that go. I taught a class today, and there was something going on, and I went back to it, and everybody in my class paid attention to everything I was doing because of the sideshow. And that defines what I do in my classroom more than anything. I'm a stand-up comedian in my classroom. If I can get you paying attention to the sideshow and I can have your attention, I can teach you anything. And I sort of picked up on it that day. And she confirmed it when she came back the next day and was like, "So, Joe, let me go to you first." And he's like, "Son of a bitch." And I don't
That
remember
had to
exactly
be
when.
the ultimate awesome feeling there, where you're like, ooh, okay, I did do this right. Because I'm sure at the moment you thought, something's working here. But when she confirmed that, I bet you were like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I articulated it quite that well, but I just thought it was funny that she did what I was doing. But on some level, in my mind, I was like, I'm gonna never stop doing that. I'm gonna do that every fucking time. And it's an unwritten rule for me in my classroom. If you have something that's working as a gag and it's making the kids pay attention, never stop fucking doing it because it works. And if there's two things. If you can relate to kids and you like each other, you can teach them anything. But also, it man, if you can get their attention, you can teach them anything. And that's the magic. And I stumbled on it like a bumbling idiot that day because I didn't know anybody else.
That's how it happens sometimes.
Yeah, lightning in a bottle right there.
Do you have anything else you want to say about this one?
Episode eight, you know what? I do just a little bit. I want to give a spoiler, and a throwback. You know, in the very first one that I wrote, I'm sitting in Buffalo Wild Wings and I'm looking forward to meeting you. And I mean, I'm just reflecting as we're talking about this. How great is it that we're doing this? Because if we hadn't, you would never know that when you came into my classroom that one day thinking about being a teacher and I threw you right in front of the kids, I was using a Miss Udall trick, you know, that inspired me to do it in the first place. I mean, we never would have connected about that, right? So that's kind of cool. But we got to go back to the fact that when I'm sitting in Buffalo Wild Wings and I'm looking forward to meeting you, I've already written amongst all this great stuff we're talking about, I was thinking about leaving the profession. I was like, I'm gonna go look for another job, and I hinted at that in my first blog.
I'm gonna ask you a real quick question. I don't want to get too far into this because we are gonna address
Right,
this down the road, but
right.
I just want to clarify with you. When you've said this a few times where you were thinking about getting another job, were you thinking about getting another teaching job, or were you actually thinking about leaving teaching? Like, was there something you were looking to do outside, or even that you had in your mind that would be outside of teaching?
I had opened up, I'm going to go look for a different job, and all options are on the table. So
Okay.
I would look for another teaching job, but also I would go find like a professional who places and go, "Hey, what am I qualified for? You know, what else is out there?" I was frustrated. I was very frustrated. And so I just don't want to close out this episode without bringing that up again, because the story that we're telling does go somewhere, and that's an important part of it. And I loved writing this blog episode. I love giving doing an homage to people who are really important to me. And the irony is, I can't even remember their real names, you know? But man, their impact on me was just huge. And I think if I know them well enough, that's the way they would want it. They would rather I remember that than that I remember their names, you know?
The guy that helped me through that one course I was telling you about earlier, his
Yeah.
name was Cameron, but I don't remember if his first name or his last name was Cameron. I just remember Cameron being there.
Yeah.
So it's
Yeah.
like, I
There you
don't know.
go.
I'd
There you
never be
go.
able to find him because it's Cameron, like Wilson from Home Improvement. Just
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, isn't that incredible though? I mean, like, just what an impact these people had on you that you're
Yeah.
thinking back to this all these years later, and like this entire path, my whole adult life, my whole career comes back to this moment, this period of time, and these people. And you're like, what were their names again? But that's
Right.
not it, it's because it's like that's not even the most important part of it though.
Yeah, and so let me just send this out into the universe because I have no way of getting in touch with those people or even knowing if they're still alive all these years later. But out in the universe, thank you guys for being who you were. Odds are good I would have landed on becoming a math teacher, maybe anyway, but I would not have done it so enthusiastically. And man, you take that away from me in the classroom, the enthusiasm of being in the classroom, and I would probably be a terrible math teacher. So,
You wouldn't be the Larson that we all know and love.
right.
I want to ask you one other thing before we cut this off. This obviously has been a really cool experience for us, but it's been very cool for me getting to, catch up with my old favorite teacher and everything all these years later, and actually
Yeah.
like form this bond, and just this whole relationship between us has been unique, which is part of what makes this cool. But it's been a great opportunity, and a great experience. But you're not going to get to do that.
Right. That ship has sailed, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think you would do if you had that opportunity, to catch it? Like, what would you say to them outside of thank you, obviously,
Yeah.
which we just said, but how do you think that meeting would go? What would you want to tell them? What would you want to talk to them about, if you got a chance to even just one day meet
Oh.
Mrs. Udall or meet a David Andrews or both of them in a Buffalo Wild Wings?
Wow, you know what? You've asked some good questions throughout these podcasts, but that's an A-lister right there.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh man. I think I would approach them very differently. I would probably, if I ran into Mrs. Udall, I would probably, in the first place, I would assume she would see me and then just start smiling.
Yeah.
It's, I would say, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me, but my name is Tim Larson." And I'm just assuming she would go, "Oh yeah, I remember exactly who you are," and then start smiling. And then I would give her an awkward hug that would go way too long. And it would become a bit of a social issue.
Okay.
I think I would just, to be honest, I would just open up and start telling stories about being in my classroom to her. Hey, so I have to thank you for putting me in front of your classroom. And I got right in and I just started jackassing up the room and backing it up with knowing what I'm talking about with math, and I'd like you to know that I think I did pretty well here. Like
Yeah.
I took the experience that you gave me and I created an entire, in my own head, a legacy of my own teaching style, and I've been true to it the whole time. And thank you for pushing me in that direction. I think that's what I would want to tell her after an awkwardly long hug. And I just have this feeling that she would, one, smile the whole time, and then two, probably drop some crazy fucking wisdom on me that I'd never would see coming and make me feel like I've been doing this for 20 whatever years and I never learned a damn thing. She's still smarter than me. That's probably how that conversation would go. David Andrews, if I saw him in a bar and had a beer with him, we would get drunk. We would start back and forthing about different scenarios and how this class could have gone, how that class could have gone, and just have a conversation funnel into God knows where, and probably just enjoy being at the same table for a while together, and then go back no better than when we got there, except that maybe we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think it would have devolved into sharing some life stories? Because, kind of in a similar way that you and I did. Ours didn't devolve. That was kind of the whole point. But like, do you
Yeah.
think it would eventually get to that point?
I think hanging out with that guy in a bar would be very, very close to what you and I did as opposed to with Miss Udall. Yeah. We wouldn't talk shop about teaching. We would immediately start bullshitting, and then I would bring up some of the stuff from being in his class, and and you know, how he's sort of manipulative isn't the right word, but orchestrated emotions and stuff like that to get you going. And then I think we would have had a ball. I think David Andrews and I would have had a ball talking.
Awesome. Well, yeah, this is why am I doing this part two?
Yeah.
And again, I'm gonna say it one more time. I said at the beginning of this this section, but this is the best thing that either of us has written up to this point.
Thank you for that. Thank you. I connected to this one emotionally, and I think that it shows.
Yeah, it does.
I felt like when I went to do part two, I needed to fulfill a promise. So I dug pretty deep on this one, and I hope everybody gets that as they read it. There's a lot of sincerity in this.
Yeah, if you guys haven't read it yet, go read it now. It is excellent.
Thanks, man. Ready to move on to the next part?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
So, hey, I told you I went to the Cubs game not that long ago, right?
Yes, this is the oh, you
So,
invited me to go.
yeah, I invited many people to go and
Yeah,
forgot that.
sorry about that.
So my work schedule right now is 4 10-hour shifts Monday through Thursday. So I have Fridays off, and I kind of forgot when I got these tickets that people
Yeah, most
usually
people
work on
work.
Friday.
Yeah.
But it worked out. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, I wanted to. I don't know if I told you this. I saw Shohei Ohtani's first home run at Wrigley Field.
Oh, that's man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The dude is something. Like,
Yeah.
we had never seen anything like him before. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, man, I know people sometimes complain about how much athletes make. I always think like, well, A, I'd rather I'm paying to see the players, not the owners who are gonna make,
Yep.
10 times more.
Yeah, that's true.
But as far as Shohei, it's like, why is he being paid so much? Well, he can do something literally no one else in the world can do as well as he does it.
Actually, he can pitch better than most people in the world, and he can hit better than most people in the world, and he happens to do both
Yeah.
of those. That's amazing.
I know. It's absolutely incredible. And the person I did end up going with to this game didn't know a ton about baseball, and they were just kind of asking questions.
Okay.
So he came up to bat when he was about to hit that home run, and I was explaining, "Oh yeah, this guy just signed for, $700 million over 10 years. So he's going to make $70 million a year, way higher than anybody else has ever
Yeah.
been paid in this game." And then without even missing a beat, pitch, crack, and it just as the ball's in the air, I just went, and that's why.
To my point, watch the ball go. God, he's
Yeah, it's
incredible.
like,
Just
and
incredible.
that's, yeah.
Thank God he's playing for the Dodgers. They needed somebody like that on their team, right?
Right. They also definitely needed that other really good Japanese pitcher and Tyler Glass now, and
The New Look
anyway.
Yankees, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Well, that's cool. Sorry, I missed it. Okay, so I think we can put a bow on why am I doing this part two. Really glad that we got to talk this one out. I feel like I know myself better. So thank you for the therapy session. The next episode, the next blog is also mine. We're switching it up a little bit for some what we think is common sense in the order. So Mike, tell us about the next episode.
I'm very excited for all of you to hear this one because we get our first official Larson story
Yep.
up next, and it's one of the most popular ones. One that he tells in the
Yes.
classroom that it'll be the story of how Tim Larson got run over by a chicken truck.
That is correct. That is correct. You know what? I'll even give you the first line because it's a grabber. On December 7th, 1978, while walking home from school, I was run over by a chicken truck. I'll just leave it right there as a teaser for all of you people out there. And so
There you
we're
go.
gonna wrap this up in a second here. So
Did
look,
you live?
yeah.
Yeah, that's I think we mentioned that in an earlier episode, but
We did.
that's
Yeah, we did. We did. But that'll come back around, I'm sure. So let you guys, if you want to catch up, if you want to read that episode, you can find us at 15-years-later.com. That's a numerical 15, mind you. 15-years-later.com. And Mike, why don't you tell everybody where they can reach us on social media?
You know what? Since you mentioned that, a quick little side note here. You know, when we tried recording this the first time, when everything was just disaster, and this is maybe kind of appropriate as a metaphor, we had both watched the movie of the week for our movie group, and we hadn't yet met with the movie group. Since then, we have, and they gave it was my pick, and they gave me the appropriate amount of grief over it. I earned all of it
I'm
because
surprised you still want to talk about this, honestly. I'm impressed with you. I'm impressed with you.
I don't know, man. I can be the butt of the joke sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's relevant here, I promise. So we had a few different genres that we each got to pick from, and I was given horror slash B movie horror. And I could have gone with a good one that I've been waiting on for a while. Or for B movie horror, I could have picked The Evil Dead because we haven't watched that yet. And I mean
Yeah, that would have been a good pick.
that's the classic
Yep.
B movie horror. That's the quintessential one. And I know so much about it. I've read Bruce Campbell's autobiography. I know a lot about that movie, but for some reason, instead, I went with Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey,
Yeah, yes, you did.
which is terrible, terrible. So you know those movies that are just so bad they're good?
Yes.
This is worse.
No, it's worse. It's really bad. That's
It's
my take on that was that it was a bad idea in the first place and it didn't even deliver on that. That was my take on it.
yes. Yeah, this movie, for those of you that are wondering just how bad it is, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 3%. So
That's a little
yeah,
high, by the way. That's a little high, I think.
probably. I would highly recommend you not watch this movie.
There you
It's
go.
if you're looking for something that's so bad it's good, it's this is again, this is worse. Don't even bother because it goes beyond that. The reason I bring that up is because I had to get myself through watching that somehow. So I live tweeted the entire thing on our 15 years later Twitter.
Yeah,
You
I
know,
like
I've
that.
I
I like that.
yeah, you know, I've last couple of weeks you guys probably heard I've been kind of about our Twitter. I haven't really used it much. I've been considering getting rid of it. Still might, but if you want to see what I thought of this movie in detail, you can go to Twitter and find us at 15 years later TM, and you'll get such gems as me saying, "This girl taking hot tub selfies is totally gonna get an accidental pic of Pooh killing her." And then my own response to myself, "Never mind, it's dumber than that."
Yeah. No, this is a good use of our
So,
Twitter feed, I think. Instead of just talking about our project, we'll throw some random shit out there. So, I like what you're doing there.
but yeah, you can find that at 15 years later, TM. As far as our other social media, which is a lot more relevant, our Instagram and Threads are both at 15 years later official. So Instagram 15 years later official. And then you can also email us any comments or questions you might have about the blog or the podcast at 15 years later blog at gmail.com. We'll take podcast questions too.
All right, guys. Next week is episode 9, How I Got Run Over by a Chicken Truck. This has been a great time. Thanks for everything, Mike. We made it. I believe we made it.
So,
Why am I doing this? Part 2. Have a good week, everybody.
take care. We are partnered with the SPDM Crew Podcasting Network.